AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products, with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM Radio, which serves the entire Philadelphia area, southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And I have a great show for you today. We have several guests. I'm going to ask, as always, that you go to your telephone, invite family members and friends to tune in, and then sit back, relax, and enjoy. Today, joining us, we will have Rich Logis, and we also have a special guest, Paul Downs, and I'm going to ask Rich to introduce him and tell us a little bit about him. I also have the ever-popular Larkin Connolly is over here from Score Philadelphia, and he's going to give us a little bit of a promo about Score. And we also have Albert Wellstein here, who is the webmaster for Score, and he's doing something to promote the National Small Business Weekend, and we're doing everything we can. And then, of course, we have the ever-popular, the star of the Made in America movie, the very well-known Mark Andel, and I hope that Mark is doing his best. He's the founder of the Made in America store, and we're going to be talking with him and all of our guests today. Also, I have Steve Haraskevich, who is in the studio with us, watching over the program from South Philadelphia, and also our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, during the last few years, many of us saw firsthand that we're able to empower ourselves to make the positive changes in America's economy simply by the way we spend our dollars. No one can reach into our pocket and take our money. We make that decision consciously. Now, it's a fact that it's not always easy to find the American-made products that we need and we're looking for, but the fact that so many people are now looking closely for American-made labels and seeking to purchase American-made is a real positive change in itself. Now, the actions of our supporters, by the way, and their spending habits is making a major, major impact on the way investors, store owners, and the American people are thinking. Now, as you know, healthcare is a very important part of what makes business tick. Without all of the things working together, that is supply and demand by the people, by the American consumer, the people in the stores serving the people, and the people making the products, we don't have a good economy. We're trying very hard to get everybody back to working so that the clock ticks appropriately. And in doing that, we're going to ask Rich Logis to talk to a special guest. Rich, please introduce our guest.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good morning to all our listeners. Larkin, very happy to have you back.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Rich.
I was back in my library this past week, and again, I have to reiterate, it's the only library I've ever been to that has Guinness on tap. It's remarkable. I've got to introduce you guys to it. I know we're waiting to get Paul Downs on, so I'll do the intro here while we're looking to get him on. I discovered Paul right before the holiday. He has a business, Paul Downs Cabinet Makers, which is near Philly. He's online. He's got his site for listeners to check out his business. I saw a blog that he wrote in Times, not that I'm here necessarily endorsing the Times, but I happen to see a blog that he wrote as a small business owner. And the blog was particularly about being a small business owner and the healthcare challenges, many of which we've been talking about for quite some time now. So we had Dr. Sue on, so we got the physician's perspective. And as a small business owner, I wanted to get Paul's perspective based on his experience in trying to sift through the labyrinth of healthcare options and requirements and talk about some of his discoveries. Do we know, guys, if he's on?
No, he's not on us. He is on with us right at this moment. I'd like to mention that Paul Downs is from Paul Downs Cabinet Makers, and they're located at 401 East 4th Street in Building 8 on the fourth floor of Bridgeport, Pennsylvania. That's Swedesburg, PA, right outside Norristown. And if anyone would like to check out Paul Downs on the internet, they can go to www.custom.conference-tables.com. And I'll tell you, he's got a beautiful site. I want to tell you, Paul, you did a great job with that site, and we're happy to have you joining us here on our broadcast, which can be heard right there where your business is from. Welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you. It's a great pleasure to be on your show.
Now, Paul, tell us a little bit about how you got started in the business.
Well, I think that my story is maybe not the usual way one becomes a woodworker. I was actually a student of engineering at the University of Pennsylvania and was intending to become an architect. And after I graduated from school, I figured I would it would be useful to me to work a little bit in construction and get some sense of how buildings are put together before I went on to become a graduate student of architecture. And I was hired as a carpenter's helper in a home renovation near where I was living. And the carpenter I was assigned to was a very good Finnish carpenter, but he always wanted to be a cabinet maker, to be someone who made furniture. And he went on and on every day about how great it would be to have a little shop where people could come in and order furniture, and then you would just make it right there, and you wouldn't have to do the kinds of things that we were doing, which was hauling drywall up into attics or working in basements or, you know, whatever. He really had a different dream for himself, and he made it sound so good that I thought, well, geez, I should just try that. That sounds fantastic. And so I quit, and I had inherited $5,000 from my grandmother, so I bought some tools, and I rented a little shop, just an empty row house, and then I hung out my shingle, and I said, now I'm in business. The only problem is I really had no idea what I was doing, but I spent the first couple of years more or less messing around and just making pieces for my own amusement and to build up a portfolio. And I was very fortunate that I was able to talk a few people into commissioning me to make things and using those contacts and that work to start to build my portfolio. And then I was also very fortunate in that I seemed to have a good mix of being able to design things and then persuade people to give me money for them. So the business started to grow. I hired my first employee in 1988, and it's been sort of a slow upward path ever since then. In the early 2000s, I actually got to the point of having 10 people in a shop, 30,000 square foot shop, and we were still making all residential furniture at that point for people's homes and sort of being a local business that dealt mainly with Philadelphia cabinet makers. In 1999, I had done one job that was conference tables. It was a big conference table for a local architect I knew. And we put a picture of that up on my first website. And in 2003, when Google really started to appear in the world, they found that picture and started returning that as a top search result if you search for a boardroom table. So all of a sudden, I'm starting to get phone calls from people all over the country and all over the world who are asking me to make them conference tables, which is something that technically we could do, but is a very different product from dining tables. It took me a couple of years, actually, to sort of get my head around the whole idea of not being a local craftsman dealing face-to-face with clients, but being someone who deals with a clientele that's spread out over a wide area. And we had to solve a pretty large number of problems in terms of logistics and design and how you sell and how you redesign the product and in order to take advantage of that. But by the time the recession came along, we were doing pretty much 100% conference tables. Now, the recession was terrible for us, and I had 22 people working for me and at that point, and by the end of 2008, we were down to 11, And by the end of 2009, I was down to 6 people. And I thought, actually, that I was going to have to go out of business at the end of 2009. But we started to see some revival in 2010. And we've been back on a nice, steady growth path ever since then. As a matter of fact, this has been our best year ever. And I now have 17 people working for me.
I want to introduce you to Larkin Connolly, who would like to say a few things to you.
Sure.
Hey, Paul.
How you doing?
My name is Larkin Connolly. I'm from SCORE Philadelphia. And your story so far is exactly what motivates our organization to do what it does.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you a question. What's the furthest you've shipped one of your tables?
The furthest I've ever shipped a product is Japan. And that happened in the late 80s when we were chosen to sort of send a sample to Japan as some part of some kind of export initiative. The furthest we've shipped a table directly in the United States, we do a lot of work in Seattle on the West Coast. That's pretty far away. And I know that we've shipped to a lot of military units that then take the tables and put them, you know, wherever they happen to go. So I would say that there's probably a Paul Downs table on every continent at this point, maybe not Antarctica.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm looking at your page right now, and it's exquisite work.
Thank you.
Yes, it's unbelievable. We're going to make sure that we post that on our internet site. I'm really pleased that Rich got in touch with you because you're exactly the kind of person that we need to promote because you started from nothing and built yourself into a great empire.
Well, it's a tiny empire.
You built the name, and Paul Downs Cabinets doesn't mean Joe Schmo Cabinets. It means Paul Downs Cabinets.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And Paul, this is Rich. I want to thank you again for coming on. And this all happened very quickly, but as soon as I saw, Paul, your blog about healthcare in the context of being a business owner, I'm not one who usually shows restraint, so as soon as I read it, I immediately picked the phone up and called you. And I think that part of your story, which I want to ask you to talk about that, the healthcare aspect of your business and what the changes that we're undergoing now, how you view them, the good and bad, and do you think that we could do better? Last month we had a physician whom we spoke about, Dr. Sue, who came on. He's part of the organization Physicians for a National Health Program. And what he talked about and his organization talked about is expanding Medicare and trying to find a harmonious marriage between the public and private sector. So the blog that you had on healthcare, if you would, I'd like to have you talk about that. I think our listeners, given that we've been talking about healthcare a lot recently, are going to be very interested to hear about that.
Okay. Well, let me just mention what my blog is. In 2009, late 2009, I mentioned that I hit a very low point in my business life and was pretty convinced that I was about to have to close the doors, and that was after 25 years at that point. And I have been a regular reader of the New York Times online edition just because it's something that, you know, I sort of poke my head into as I do other work all day. And they have a blog there called You're the Boss, which is really about what it's like to run a very small business. And they have a number of different contributors who each write every week or so and talk about some aspect of running a small business. Having been a reader of that blog, I noticed a gap, you might say, in what different subjects they covered, and which is this, that they had nobody who was talking about what it's like to not succeed at business. And I think that this is a very common failing of the business press, you know, no matter what the media, which is that the stories that you read tend to be about success, how to be successful, or people who were successful, and they always kind of start the same way and they end the same way, which was, you know, I struggled for a while, and then I found the magic fairy dust, and now I have $1 billion, and this is what you should do. And Yeah, that's nice. It's inspiring, but it's not a good reflection of many, many businesses, because most businesses, I mean, a large number of them fail pretty quickly. But then there's a lot of businesses also that sort of get to a certain level and then have difficulties now and then. And the number of people who actually become enormously wealthy and have this huge cash out moment and buy their private jet, that's pretty small. So at the moment when I thought I only had 2 weeks left in my business life, I sent an email to the editors of this blog, and I said, you know, I really like your blog, but you're really entirely missing stories of people whose businesses are failing. There's got to be a lot of them in this recession, and I'm one of them. And I would be willing to write about whatever happens to me as I fail, because I was thinking it was about to happen, and I started looking for information as to what I could expect. You know, like, how bad is it going to be? What am I going to have to do with my landlord? What am I going to have to do with my credit card commitments? You know, like, just how do you do it? What are the mechanics of shutting a business down? And sent that email off, and then it being an email, I kind of forgot about it. And actually, I came so close to having to shut the doors, like within hours of having to do it. But then I got a couple of orders that kept me going, and I sort of forgot about the email. I didn't get a response immediately, and I just forgot about it and kept worrying about my day-to-day problems. And then 2 months later, I got a reply from the editor, Lauren Feldman, of that blog. And he wrote me back. He said, sorry it took so long to get back to you. You know, this is a very interesting idea. Can you give me an example of some of the things you wanted to write about? So I sent him back that list. I was like, oh, I've gone through all kinds of stuff. I fought with my partner. I had to lay off all my people one day. And, you know, I've had to negotiate with vendors. I've had this, never stiffed anybody, but I came awfully close. And these are all things that I haven't really seen discussed in a real way. You know, like, how do you actually call a vendor and say, look, I'm not going to give you the $35,000 I owe you, but here's what I'm going to do, and then how that goes down. So real nuts and bolts advice and a real look at what a lot of people go through all the time. And long story short, he said if I was capable of writing, you know, writing to the standard of the times that I was on. So as it turns out, that's another thing I can do. And so I started writing in the early 2010, like March of 2010, the first post came out. And ever since then, every week or so, I have chosen a topic entirely of my own, you know, whatever I choose to write about. And just wrote, oh, this is what I did, here's what happened to me, and then send that in. And the Times is very kind to publish that. So when we're talking about my blog post, that's what we're talking about. And one of the subjects that I have written about extensively is health insurance costs. Every November, my health insurance agent calls me and has done this for many, many years, and they sort of send over a package. And they say, well, here's your renewals for next year. And you look at it, you know, you're kind of afraid to look at it because the cost increases can be large, and they seem to come entirely at random. So that I've been buying health insurance probably since the early 90s, and I really started paying attention to it in the late 90s when the cost started to go up and up and up. And in the 2000s, when I had a pretty good-sized staff and we were offering health insurance, and then, you know, you'd open the envelope and you'd see it went up 15% this year, that was a serious consideration. Now it's starting to cost some real money. So this year came along, and I knew just from hearing about it in the media that the Affordable Care Act was going to cause some changes in the way insurance plans were presented and what they're designed to do. And I thought, well, I'm going to pay some attention to this as I go through this process this year. And usually it's a fairly simple thing to write about. You get the quote and you say, oh, my God, and then you write about how it sucks that you have no idea why the numbers went up or down. And that was the story for 3 years. But this year I did get my renewal, and the cost did go up 33%, and then I decided to not just sign that contract and complain about it, but to really look into what has changed in the market, what has changed in the insurance market, and what you know, whether I could turn up any useful advice for other small business owners who are in my position.
Paul?
Yeah.
Rich, Mark, Larkin, and the gang, and everybody out there, we have a lot more to say, but I have to pause right now to say thanks to the people that are supporting us. And also, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Mark Andel, who is a man who knows a lot about this particular subject. But first, I want to remind all of you that this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the 6th, 7th, and 8th of December, is National Small Business Weekend. And by the way, shopping on these days certainly helps retailers know that you are a consumer supporting the American-made movement. Also, Philadelphia Net Cost Market is located at 11701 Busselton Avenue at the Leo Mall in Northeast Philadelphia. And by the way, Net Cost Market is a place that features a large selection of the finest meats, groceries, dairy, beverages, and sweets with a European touch in every aisle. I encourage you to get on over there. Whatever you want, boy, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be available to you at NetCost. You can check them out on the internet at netcostmarket.com. And don't forget, the Made in America store is offering 100% all American-made items. And you can view the many items available from the Made in America store by going to their shopping online site at madeinamericastore.com. And Mr. Chester Chanowski, who is the owner of Serena's Auto Body Shop, reminds you that he has two locations in Philadelphia area. One is at 6201 Oxford Avenue. That's off Oxford Avenue and the Roosevelt Boulevard in Northeast Philadelphia. The other is at 691 Bethlehem Pike in Montgomeryville, Pennsylvania. For all of your auto body repair needs, remember Serena's Auto Body Shop. You can give them a call at 215-535-6606. And if you're planning to do some travel, remember Nina Titta of J World Travel is located at 2626 East Allegheny Avenue in Philadelphia. You can call J World Travel at 215-634-6006. And if you're going out to have a good time and, of course, win a little too, don't forget our supporter, the Sugar House Casino, located at 1001 North Delaware Avenue in Philadelphia. Visit them on the internet at sugarhousecasino.com. And, of course, when you're out at the supermarket, look for the name Giorgio. They're a symbol of quality since 1928. And you'll be very pleased with all of their frozen food items and their mushroom products. And Mr. Leon Mankowski, attorney at law, reminds you that his office is at 2624 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia. For more information, you can give him a call at 215-739-8521. Well, thanks for hearing about our efforts. With our sponsors, I want you to please make sure you go out and shop at their locations, call on them for their services, and be sure to let them know that you tune in to American Workers Radio, which is part of the daily Polish American Network here on 860 AM. We're talking with a special guest today, in addition to our ever-popular panel, Larkin Connolly, Rich Loges, and Mark Andel. We have a special guest, Paul Downs, a cabinet maker, who has given us a very interesting part of what he had to go through during his life. I'm going to ask Mark Andel to take the microphone and introduce yourself and let Paul know a little bit about your experience.
Hello, everybody. And Paul, I'm Mark Andel. I started my first business out of my father's garage back in 1985 and grew that business to about 1989, became incorporated and opened up a welding manufacturing division. And then in 2008, 2009, ran into troubles, and that's where the Made in America store came from, because I wanted to stand up for American manufacturers. But I first want to say, Paul, very nice to hear your story. Boy, do we have a lot in common. I think we're from the same fabric. I don't think I know. You mentioned a partner in there. I've been through the partner. You didn't mention, I'm sure you have family and friends, too, somewhere in that story.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I hate to confess this, but there have been moments when I had to call for help, and thank God that my father and my brother were willing to take my call and help me out at some pretty desperate moments. But
You mentioned father and brother, and I'm blessed with great family and friends. And again, my father took his first second mortgage on the house for $10,000. My brother gave me $5,000 when I started, and I had four, you know, back in 1989. You know, mm-hmm. But my story is so similar to yours. But in 2007-08, I was at about 69 employees, four plants in Western New York, general welding and fabricating plants, where we did retail, commercial, and industrial work. From your everyday residential guy all the way to a lot of military projects. But different from you, I was totally steel. And I picked on carpenters because I can't weld that wood back together. I didn't know what to do with it. But, Paul, we're so similar. But by 2008, I had put up a new building facility, about 48,000 square foot, invested almost $3 million. It was my dream shop. I had ran around to borrowed money, places I rented and made work from barns with dirt floors, and never had a rich uncle, so borrowed everything. But I finally got to put up my own shop in 2008. But right after I opened it, I was about to have the open house and the hot dog giveaway, but I lost three of my major accounts. One was a military, one was oil and mining, and one was a product I made for the fencing industry, a steel post that went inside PVC fencing to give it rigidity. Mm-hmm. And I had shipped that to six regional support centers, and like you, grew and grew just out of my, from cutting the first one with a hacksaw to developing an automation system to weld these posts. But that company had decided to get a cheaper price, and I had to follow BOCA certification, and I'm a CWI welding inspector, and I had to cover all these certifications for this post because it was used on high-rises. But they said they had a cheaper place in Florida. I had built the product for 10 years, and it was a $3 million account yearly. But what it ended up being was in Florida, it was China. You know, China shipped it to Florida, Florida shipped it to Western New York, and then they took over my account pretty well overnight, and it was a huge blow. I went from 69 employees down to 31 in that year, 09. By 2010, the recession was getting heavy, so 2010 was my toughest year. But it really woke me up. I closed two plants. I was just like you, and can I relate to what you went through. You said you went down to about six employees from 22, and we could share a few drinks together, I'm sure. Toughest time of my life. Great workers, great people, and I had to let them go, you know. And nobody can really grab hold of that unless you're in them shoes, you know. And really, really hard. But since then, I crawled back. I came up with the Made in America store as a statement to stand up for our country, our soldier, American workers, and people that work with their hands, inventors, entrepreneurs. That's where Larkin Conley and Rich and Mike, we get along so good. We all understand what that means. That's the American dream, you know, and I think we're losing a part of that, and it's great to hear your story. But the Made in America store came along as a statement, and I didn't really care if it lasted a month or two, but I knew it needed to happen. So my store, the products have to be 100% made in America. And, you know, the first requirements were 100% made in America, top quality, and must feed an American family. So I could only find 50 of them products back in April of 2010 to open the store, which was an out-of-business Ford dealership, another part of the story. And now we're up to 6,500 products made in America. We have three stores, actually four with Niagara Falls, and then our online site. And we started a wholesale department because nobody actually ever bothered to put 6,500 Made in America products under one roof. We have nothing that plugs in or takes a battery. People have changed to be in our store. Our biggest win this year wholesale was supplying the VA hospitals, the 168 across the country, our top products. So it's been quite a ride, and people come to our store for a destination. We just had a bus as we're speaking. We've had 280 buses since we opened to visit the store, which is kind of sad in our country. But I'm with you. You know, you stayed hungry. You stuck to it. It's your baby. You came back out of a hole, and I was just like you. I was just about to close my doors. I said I'll do the Made in America store before I go out totally. And here we've got the general welding still running. We've got the store, which is very neat. I've got young nephews, young blood, and we're still beating the path. But, boy, is it tough. Yep. Because you got to live and breathe it, and the cost of sales went up. You talk about health insurance. I want to hear what you have to say. Because even this year coming up, I reinvent myself every day, if not every week, and I know my great people. I've got people that will run to the other side of town, run back, and say, Mark, why did we do that, or not even ask me why.
So, Mark and Paul, you're both small business people, and, you know, I've learned something over the last 3 years in my association with SCORE, and that is that entrepreneurs, small business people, don't fail. They very rarely ever fail. They quit. And you're both stellar examples of that, of the American fiber that says, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make it work. You learn how to think at night at 4 o'clock in the morning when you can't sleep. You learn how to try to pretend like you're talking to your children and hearing every word they say when you're actually calculating a balance in your checkbook at work and in the back of your brain. It's
and worried about payroll, right?
And always, always worried about where the payroll is going to come from.
And that is such a true statement, Larkin, because we have more of these stories and people like Paul and Mark in the system. We have to bring them to the public because our listeners love this type of a broadcast.
So, Paul, can we get back for the next couple minutes and let you finish the Affordable Care Act?
Yes, and let me just start with one sort of paradoxical statement, though, which is that a small manufacturer like me or like Mark, we own our business and we offer health insurance to our employees. In my mind, I've been doing it all these years mostly because there wasn't really any alternative. And this was something, everybody needs health insurance. And the way that the system was set up was so unfair to people who weren't buying through a company that it was just a moral imperative for me to figure out how to get people, you know, give them that coverage. And so I've always had offered to all of my people an HMO or whatever, but offered to allow them to sign up all their dependents. And we ended up eventually starting to split the cost with the employees. But it was just something that I felt like, you know, if I don't do this and my people don't have it, then they are really at the mercy of a very crappy market. If they try to buy on their own, they're going to get excluded if they have any pre-existing conditions and they have to pay much higher rates and they also don't get any kind of tax deduction for doing it.
And you know what's funny about what you've just said? I've heard Mark Andel say the same thing, almost verbatim.
Yeah, I mean, I work with people. I've had some guys who work with me now for 20 years and I've seen them get married, have kids, have family, and I feel like that you work for me, then you're kind of in my tribe, and I have some moral duty to try to provide pay and benefits and a working situation that allows you to have a decent life. And also that makes my day much easier. When I walk in and see my people, I don't feel like, you know, that my business model is somehow extracting wealth from them. It's all of us working together to get wealth from other people by providing a good product that everybody's happy to buy. So that's something that's been my satisfaction for all these years. Now, the flip side is that it makes me uncomfortable in a way to have the power that to make decisions that affect all of my people in a very intimate way. In other words, I can choose to get this policy or that policy, and I can choose to make it this copay or that copay, and I'm making a decision that I'm not comfortable just on the face of it of making decisions for people's financial lives. I mean, I don't worry about what kind of car they buy or what kind of car insurance they get or where they buy their house. That's up to them. They're adults. They should take care of that. But because of the nature of our whole economy, that's dropped in my lap and I have to make that decision. Well, the key feature of the Affordable Care Act to me, and the Affordable Care Act is an enormously complicated piece of legislation that sticks its finger in all aspects of health care. And I can't really comment on what it does to hospitals or doctors. I can only comment on what it does to me as a business owner. So that the key feature of it to me is that it has made the act of buying insurance for either someone, a small business owner like me, or an individual, pretty equivalent. In other words, if my workers were, for some reason, they didn't work for me, and they were just out trying to get health insurance, they're no longer automatically getting screwed. As a matter of fact, Affordable Care Act has redefined sort of the base level of value that an insurance policy must contain, so that it's much harder for insurance companies to sort of design these horrible rip-off policies. And it's much easier for someone who's shopping, if they put some time into thinking about it, to get to understanding what they're going to get and to paying a reasonable price for it. And this is pretty huge, all those pre-existing condition exclusions are just gone. You can no longer keep someone from buying insurance because of a pre-existing condition. And that means that whether someone's getting insurance through my company or not, they can get a reasonably good deal at a reasonable price. And as a matter of fact, if they're a low-income worker, they can get a substantial subsidy from the government that will help make it quite affordable. So to the extent that you think that people should be able to buy health insurance and that people shouldn't necessarily be thrown to the wind just because they were unfortunate to have some kind of pre-existing condition, I think the Affordable Care Act is a great thing. Now, the trick is that there is still a substantial tax break for people who are buying through a company. And since my workers are reasonably well paid and they don't qualify for the subsidies, that means that if I just decided to wash my hands of buying insurance at all and not making decisions about their private lives and just letting them do that, and I just got rid of the whole thing, they'd be able to buy policies, but they would be paying a surcharge, essentially, of 20, you know, whatever their tax rate is. And I think that if I made that announcement, it just isn't going to go over real well with my people. I provide a good workplace, and I don't think anybody would quit, but it would be a bit of a shift for them, and I don't think anybody would be happy. And it's not really my ideal work day to go in and make everybody unhappy. So I've decided that I want to continue to buy it through the company. Now, Mark, have you made a sort of thought about a similar decision?
Yeah. It's a major decision. Again, I'm always looking at it. And like you, I've had the health insurance previous or past years raise 15%. This year was 18%, and keep going up. So this year I developed with our standard broker. I tried all different brokers and tried to, you know, learn more about the health insurance and what's available and cost. Because, as you know, health insurance in my company is very important. I mean, if I mess with it, it rattles a cage a little bit of my welders and, you know, assemblers, and they get nervous, and the young ones don't really know why they need it at all. The older ones need it. You know, they've got children. So this year I came up with three plans. The basic plan we had, which was Aqua Blue from Blue Cross Blue Shield, and then there was an ending plan, which was a higher deductible, which I was trying to get the younger people not to just drop health insurance because it was their choice. At one point at my company, I covered 100%. Then I went to 75-25. Now I'm basically at 50-50 because of the cost, which with my company is about $250,000. I had 69 employees. I'm about 45-50, mm-hmm. Just under 50. But, you know, so I had to make – I'm just trying to learn more and more, and I'm listening to you. I'm trying to learn more about the Affordable Health Care Act and what it could do to business. I think you're hitting on really neat things because your employees are paid fairly decent. So are mine. I've got decent benefits, but I've got to keep the health insurance. Health and gasoline, you know, prices really affect my disposable income of my average wage people, you know, that I have. So I'm not sure. I was just talking about this yesterday with my one engineer. I don't know enough about what's available. You know, Healthy New York has its own plan, and I think, you know, that's something I'm looking into. But you've got to wait 6 months, I believe, before you can make a decision. You know, say if our employees dropped what I have and went, they've got to have a six-month period in between. So I don't know, Paul, all the details, but I am looking because it's my number one concern for 2014.
Well, I'll tell you this, that the details, there are tons of them, and it takes an enormous amount of time to get your head around them. I have been, since I got my renewal package at the end of October, and then I decided that I was going to write about this, writing about something forces me to sort of think about it clearly and to take notes as I go along. I've been spending at least two-thirds of my hours since then just dealing with healthcare. Now, one of the reasons that I've put so much time into it is that because I have this ability to broadcast whatever I turn up through the medium of, you know, a major national and international paper, it's worth it to me to spend some extra time on it, because if I find something that's useful to me, I know it will be useful to a large number of small business owners. So I've been looking at it very, very carefully, and I don't really want to try to recap everything I found, because it's too complicated for 1 hour. It would probably take a whole day to explain. But I have been, I hope you guys can put up a link to the blog post on your website. And I'll just mention that if you Google Paul Downs, P-A-U-L-D-O-W-N-S, and then New York Times, you'll turn up all the things that I've written about this. And basically, what I've found is that the ACA enforcing some standards on what an insurance policy can be has brought great clarification to the market and made it much simpler to buy insurance, because now you have some idea of what you're getting. You're in New York and you have a state exchange. We're in Pennsylvania and we're working with the federal exchange. But the whole idea also of forcing insurance companies to put all of their policies and compete in a single place, again, starts to put some pressure on them to make it easier to understand what the choices are and to put some more price competition into the system. So I think that now there's a lot of drama about whether this federal website is working as well as it can be this particular second. And I think it is unfortunate that they kind of botched the rollout. But the whole concept of having a single place where you can see a number of companies with pricing, I mean, that's a marketplace. And that's something that we never had under the existing system.
Paul, Mark, and Rich, we're going to break away to get a word from some of our sponsors, and we'll pick it back up in a couple minutes.
Very good. And the next portion of our broadcast today is being presented by Polka Deli, and they're located at 2719 East Allegheny Avenue in the Port Richmond section of Philadelphia, as well as by well-known attorney Michael Steinman, who has two offices in Philadelphia. For more information, you can give him a call at 215-564-1866. And also, best wishes to all of you from Dr. Eva Machak and her two dental office staff members. And they are located at 3084 Armingo Avenue in Port Richmond. And the other is at 4250 Richmond Street in the Bridesburg section. For more information, call Dr. Machak at 215-739-2787. And Martin Bednarek, who is the president of Washington Savings, Kazimierz Wielki Bank, and their five locations in Philadelphia, urges everyone to go out and support National Small Business Weekend this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And if you're planning to do some travel anywhere in the USA or around the world, remember that Polish American Travel Service is located at 2714 East Allegheny Avenue in Philadelphia. And also, if you have some legal needs, remember Yolanda Konopacka DeCipio, attorney at law, is there to assist you. You can call her at 215-423-4824. And also, we have another dentist in our advertising schedule, and that is Dr. Włodzimierz Zinn of Everest Dental, located at 9892 Busselton Avenue in Philadelphia. For more information, call Dr. Zinn at 215-671-0188. And don't forget, Net Cost Market is located at 11,701 Busselton Avenue in Northeast Philadelphia, where you will find unbelievably well-priced products. Stop by yourself and make sure you check them out on the internet at netcostmarket.com. And also, don't forget Mark Andel of the Made in America store. You can check him out and get some of those products sent to you in time for the holidays. Go to madeinamericastore.com. Well, as I mentioned earlier, this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday is National Small Business Weekend. And gentlemen and all of our listeners, I want you to know that as I did some traveling around and went into some of the bigger stores, I want to acknowledge some of them don't like the idea, because talking about National Small Business Weekend means that I'm encouraging people to share their dollars with the big and the small stores. So I'm trying to turn them around, and we're doing a great job of it. And as you know, as you go out, keep in mind the goal of the Buy American Made campaign and American Workers Radio. We're trying to reinstate at least 50-50 between American-made and foreign-made products in our store. If we can get that to be possible, our economy will be great. So please do go out and shop National Small Business Weekend and spread the word. And check us out on the internet at nationalsmallbusinessweekend.com. And visit our new Facebook site. Go to facebook.com/AmericanWorkersRadio and be sure to like us. Well, we're back here with Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and our special guest, Paul Downs, who I think that everyone tuned in is really pleased with what they have to say. I want to ask Paul a very important question. Paul, do you feel that all of the people from the healthcare systems, the hospitals, the doctors, the nurses, were properly consulted in getting this Affordable Care Act together?
Oh, who knows? you know, the actual process of writing legislation, I think, is often mysterious, and every possible interest group is involved. I will say one thing, which, considering that this is a show about American workers and American made, is that it's easy to forget that our healthcare system is actually an enormous source of employment, providing the kind of decent jobs that that otherwise might go overseas. In other words, it's not easy to set up a hospital in China that will provide care to someone in Philadelphia. So, to a certain extent, if the healthcare sector is growing disproportionate to the rest of the sector, it's not necessarily the end of the world. When I go to the doctor and I check in and I see a bunch of ladies there behind the desk doing billing or whatever, it always strikes me that as a business owner, I wish my health insurance bills would go down, but that as just an ordinary human being, what that means is some of those ladies get fired. And so I'm always, you know, I'm not an automatic, oh, we just got to cut the fat out of the system, because cutting fat out of a system can be enormously painful. And I think it's very unfortunate that it's grown to the exact configuration that it is, but just trying to cut it is going to be a hard thing to do.
Paul, it's 6% of our economy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 6% of our total GNP. I mean, that's a huge, huge number.
Yep.
And to think that these laws were passed without it, and we all know that lobbyists didn't get a chance on this one. This one was done at 3 in the morning. It was written in 10 days. Well, it was pulled together in 10 days. It was passed. And we've got the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, on major television shows last week saying, we got the thing put together, we got it passed, now we want to explain to you what it is. Really?
Well, if I can just interject. So when I started looking into it carefully, I was very neutral on the act. You know, like, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I'm just going to wipe my mind of everything I've heard in the media and every political preconception I might have, and just look at what is in front of me, try to tease out what it does for me, and then record and model as I go along, like, can I save money? Can I make good choices for my people? And I would have to say that I've been actually pleasantly surprised to find that the act has a number of features that should be viewed as business-friendly. Now, whatever you feel about the nature of political process in America, I don't think that that's, you know, the act is what it is. And what it is something that actually can reward a business owner who looks carefully at it with the ability to continue to provide insurance to their people but an insurance that is better. It's a better insurance, and it can be acquired at a lower price. It is not automatic that you're going to be paying more, because basically you can now tailor what you offer to people will be a much better fit to what they need at particular ages. You don't have to offer just one plan. You can offer up to 10 for me.
I think we all understand that. And I think Mark and Rich and myself have said, and Michael have said all along, healthcare needs to be addressed in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't say to insurance companies, okay, here's the deal. Kids can stay on it till they're 26. Now, as I look back in my past, I mean, you know, at 21, my father said, get out of the house or start paying rent. So now we're coddling our children until age 26 on our parents. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me, but whatever.
Well,
and the pre-existing condition, somebody has to pay for this.
Well, can I just add something to that? The way that the insurance policies are priced by age is not well understood. As a matter of fact, this is something that I had to look very carefully to figure out exactly how the prices rise per age. And they do go up every year, and there's a huge jump between age 20 and 21. And that once this is widely known, I think that people will start to realize it's actually a good idea to not have the kids who are 26 on the same policy as the parents, but that the act is designed, and maybe it wasn't designed, but the effect of it will be to encourage people to leave the house and to set up their own household and to get much cheaper insurance as a result. And this is something that's not only not understood, I don't believe that it has been written about at all. I'm about to post a major story on this in the Times tomorrow morning. And I've talked to every agent that I've talked to, and even up to senior vice presidents of Independent Blue Cross, which is a multi-billion dollar company, and they didn't even realize that the act had mandated that policies be priced this way. And so that there's so you're right that it's unfortunate that an act gets passed and nobody really realizes what's in it. But looking at what's in it, I'm finding, hey, this isn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. And maybe we were just lucky about that, but I don't think that you should just reject the act because you didn't like the way it was made.
Paul, I have a question. What do you think would be the result if we put all of the medical systems, the healthcare plans that we have in place right now, Medicare, Medicaid, and made it into a single payer system?
Well, I think it's probably a bridge too far for us. But the key thing would be that it would be good for my pocketbook, and it would be bad for the pocketbook of everybody who's now in the healthcare system. So again, I would be happy, but it would distress all those ladies who are working in billing and insurance and all the agents who would disappear. It would be a huge restructuring of our economy.
But you know, Paul, I want to say this to you. That is something that we have to accept. And also, many of those people who are put into these service-oriented jobs could then go into industries that can be expanded in the USA. We have many industries like yourself and Mark that could be expanded. We need to restore that 50-50 balance. Otherwise, we'll have all people on some kind of a benefit, on kind of some sort of a program where they're going to get a discount or in this or a discount on that. I agree that we should get into one system, get all the parties together and see what can be done. Why is a pill in Philadelphia costing 50 cents and you go to New Jersey and it's 35?
Those are excellent questions, and I think that you're right, but the path to get from where we are to that happy day is going to be extraordinarily painful.
Well, you know,
I'm not sure that we're up for it.
Right.
Rich?
Michael, Paul, first off, Paul, again, thank you so much for being on. I'm going to slightly disagree with you on something, though, about the bridge comment. You mentioned a couple things today as I was taking notes. I heard you say tax breaks and subsidies. Tax breaks and subsidies are what we would consider government spending, which really is taxes. Right, government spending, I mean, Boehner, Obama don't put their hands in their pockets in that sense, right? We pay taxes. A single-payer system, I do think it has been shown throughout the years that any employment that would be lost, we could find employment elsewhere in a single-payer system. And subsidies and these things, that means that there are still going to be people in the under the Affordable Care Act who are going to pay into this system, which we'll call Medicare, and are still going to be shut out. I do think it's great that as a business owner, you were able to find what sounds like a pretty good fit for your business. But I do want to tell you, Paul, for every one of Paul Downs, I think there are dozens of business owners who are not going to find the end result to be the same, even though they and their employees are paying into this system called Medicare that they will pay into for as long as they physically work.
That's right, and I want to add something to this, too. This is just another form of work on an employer to that they have to look for programs. Paul, could you imagine if everyone had a single-payer system for the basics, and then they could go out and or you could provide them some sort of a an enhanced policy if you chose.
A Part B.
Can I just jump in and I think that, first of all, I personally would love a single-payer system. I think that, you know, happy for me if I had been born in Canada and I could run my business without ever once having to think about health care, I would take that choice. And I don't disagree with a single thing that any of you guys have said. Now, one of the other good effects of the Affordable Care Act, if you have under 50 employees, is that you can simply walk away from health insurance, basically knowing in your own mind that you're not doing a terrible thing to your employees, and you can just be out of it entirely. And that's a decision that I weighed long and hard, and because, honestly, I couldn't see it as being a hugely negative thing to do. I just decided that for this particular year, it's too much for me to spring that on my people, because I think that there's so much fear and misinformation about this act that that would be a very radical move.
Paul, could we ask you to come back in the very near future so we can continue our conversation? I
Absolutely.
Hate to say it. This hour has passed unbelievable, and I want to ask Larkin Connolly to say a few words.
Well, yeah, thank you, Michael. He's giving me the microphone to plug, shamelessly plug, an event that we're having at SCORE Philadelphia. But, Paul, you're going to have to come back. I will sell you the same helmet and shield I'm going to sell Rich Loges as we continue to talk about a single-payer system, because I'd like to take you both on. But let me talk about an event that we're having here in Philadelphia. It's an event surrounding the Affordable Care Act, and it's being presented by Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses, SCORE Philadelphia, and the Community College of Philadelphia. And it is tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. from 8 to 10 at the Community College of Philadelphia Center for Business and Industry at 18th and Callow Hill. You can go on to SCORE Philla, that's SCOREPHILA, and click on our events calendar and register for the event. Again, it's tomorrow from 8 to 10 at the Center for Business and Industry of the Community College of Philadelphia. Dave Dixon, who has been a guest on our program, who is the district director of the Small Business Administration, and I've seen Dave probably on three or four different occasions explain the Affordable Care Act, and he has less times of saying, "I don't know," as he continues to give these and as things continue to change with the ACA. But it's a great session. There'll be a lot of small business people in the audience. Again, trying to figure out, as Paul Downs has and Mark Andel and every other small business person, just exactly how the Affordable Care Act today will affect their business.
Thank you, guys. I hate to say it, but this hour has passed. I want to thank all of our listeners. Make sure that you tune in on Saturday at 11, and of course, be back with us here next Wednesday at 11 a.m. Thanks for spreading the word. Remember to go out and support Small Business Weekend. My thanks to Rich Loges, Mark Andel, Paul Downs, Larkin Connolly, and our special guests, Albert Wellstein and Steve Haraskevich and Stephen Smolchinski and Henry Chaplinski, all here with us in the studio. Until Wednesday at 11, my very best wishes.